Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levinger. Coming up in this hour adventure, later on we hear a naval story on the Cavalcade of America. Right now it's suspense with the Anthony Ellis story, The Mountain, broadcast on CBS Radio on March 16, 1953.
Autolite and its 98,000 dealers bring you Mr. John Hodiak in tonight's presentation of
Suspense. Tonight, Autolite presents a story about heroism as we document the attempt of three brave men to conquer the mountain. Our star, Mr. John Hodiak. We made the fourth camp on the East Glacier, 22,000 feet above sea level. In that cold, thin air, we stood looking up. And in the great loneliness, we saw it. For a few seconds as the mist cleared, we saw it. The mountain, the peak towering over us, was beautiful and terrible. Then a swirling curtain moved around it and it was gone again. There were six of us and the porters. Manton and Leeds had been sent back to the third camp some 4,000 feet below. Both had been badly frostbitten. So then there were six of us left to make the attempt. Nobody had done it before. No one had ever reached the top of that tremendous windswept place. And now we were ready for the assault. That night we held our last meeting in the fourth camp. Gaines, Thomas, Feldman, Eldridge, Perucci, and myself.
That's the best way. The most practical. Three of us stay and three of us try to make it.
We stand a better chance if we all do it together. What do you think, Bob?
I don't think so. Thomas is right. If three of us go and have to turn back, the other three will still be fresh. They can have a go.
That's right.
All right?
Sure.
Yes, of course.
Okay, two parties. Thomas, you'll head up the second. Stay at the camp. I'll lead the first one up.
Right.
Now, wait a minute. Don't we get a vote on this?
No, it's a waste of time. Start voting and we'll start arguing again. Those monsoons aren't going to hold off forever.
Take it easy, John.
Yes,
how's your leg, Harry?
Not bad. I might hold you back. You better leave me down here.
All right. Perucci?
You want me to go?
Feel up to it?
Sure, you bet.
Gaines?
Okay.
You're not acclimated.
The cough? It's nothing.
It'd get a lot worse, higher. Better not.
Well, look, why not let me go with you and leave Harry in charge down here? That leg will be all right in a couple of days, don't you think, Harry?
It ought to be.
He hasn't had enough experience for a lead man.
Oh.
There's nothing wrong with me. Or is there? Well,
I don't know, John. It's going to be pretty tough.
Well?
Well, listen, John.
You keep out of this, Thomas. What about it, Bob? I'm in good shape.
I guess so. Okay, you, Perucci, and myself. That'll be it. We'll start at daybreak. And that's the way we decided. There was no other possibility. It wasn't that we didn't like Eldridge. It was just that he was always flying off the handle, and because of that, he wasn't a good risk. Nerves don't go so well with mountain climbing. Not that mountain. Cold and dangerous. It's never gained peak, hidden in mist. Later that evening, Thomas and I were going over the equipment before turning in.
You know, someday they'll invent an oxygen tank that's light. Bet these things weigh over 30 pounds.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob. About Eldridge.
What about him?
You think he ought to go?
It's the only way, I guess.
You're taking a big chance.
He'll be all right.
If we could only wait just a couple of days, Harry would be all right.
We're late now. If the monsoon starts, none of us will be able to do it.
That's the trouble. Well, you have Perucci along. He gets on pretty well with Eldridge. That'll help.
It'll be fine. We're all in good shape. I think we're going to make it.
In a way, I hope you don't. I'd like a crack at it myself. Oh, wouldn't that be something? The first man to get to the top.
You understand why I didn't take you, don't you?
Oh, of course. Wishful thinking, that's all. Well, you better turn in or I'll finish checking the stuff.
Okay, see you in the morning. On May the 18th, we started to climb the Northwest Ridge. We were at 23,000 feet. Each of us carried a 30-pound oxygen tank besides the equipment we needed for our next camp. For 3 or 4 hours, it wasn't bad. But as we went higher, the wind started to take it out of us, and we felt the cold more.
Take 10, eh?
Yeah.
Boy, will you look at it up there? That's it. You almost feel like you could jump and touch the top.
Big jump, Perucci.
What do you figure? About 3,500 feet more?
Something like that.
But if the weather holds, we might make it by tomorrow.
That's what I thought.
Not a cloud in the sky. Oh, will you look at that thing? Boy, what can you say when you see a mountain like that?
Save your breath. We'll move in a few minutes.
Then we hit patches of snow and the pace slowed down. We'd spelled each other as leader and it was my turn up ahead. Perucci was bringing up the rear when I heard him yell and felt that dreadful tug of the rope at the same time.
Bob! Perucci's gone down! Dig in!
All right! What is it? Crevasse?
Yes! Use the ice axe!
It won't hold! Snow's too soft here!
I'm slipping, Bob! I'm slipping!
I saw the snow crumbling away from beneath Eldridge's feet. I saw it and I thought of a man I knew who slipped from an aerial ladder 100 feet up, and as he fell to the ground, his legs raced wildly, arms waving, trying to find the rungs to pull himself back up. And Eldridge was doing it now, his heels churning into the soft snow at the edge of the crevasse. Then he found solid ice.
Bob?
Yeah?
Can you pull me back? I can't get Perucci out from here. I'm afraid I'll go over too. I'm right on the edge.
Can he get a hold with his axe?
No. He's hanging free. The wall slopes in. Ice!
I'll try. You'll have to pull too, Bob. I can't do it alone. Too much weight.
I tell you, I can't. I'm afraid to move. I can feel it going under me, all around me.
There's solid ice a couple of feet back. I can grab it with my axe.
Don't let go. Don't let it go, Slack. Bob, I'll go over.
I won't. Just hang on.
I knew that if I slipped when I reached behind me, it was the end. I looked at the figure of Eldridge below me, his body bent backwards away from the drop beneath him. I closed my eyes, reached behind with my axe, and dug into the ice.
I can't! I'm slipping! I can't!
And as Eldridge shouted, I thought I heard another cry. And suddenly the rope's weight was lighter. I saw Eldridge fall, then get up on hands and knees and crawl away from the crevasse toward me. Norman! Where's Norman?
He's gone. He fell. He's gone.
He can't be. How?
I don't know. Perhaps the rope frayed on some ice at the edge. Suddenly it went slack. I heard him, Bob. I heard him.
Maybe it's not too deep. He might have fallen into a drift at the bottom. Stay here. I've got to see. I belayed the rope about the ice axe and paid out the rest of it as I slid down the slope to the crevasse. But when I looked over the edge, I knew. That dark blue, almost black emptiness below. I knew. There'd be no snowdrift for Norman Perucci's body, unless it was perhaps 10,000 feet below us. We bypassed that place, found a shelter from the wind, and pitched our tent. For a long time, neither one of us spoke. I think we were too exhausted to say anything. Exhausted and shocked. There were only two of us now.
Keep hearing him.
I know.
No, you don't. Not the way I do.
He's a nice kid.
Yes.
Doesn't seem as cold without the wind.
How high do you think we are?
24,000.
I wondered. It's a little hard to breathe.
Better use the oxygen.
No, not yet.
We won't need it.
Yes, we will. We'd better save it.
We're going down in the morning.
No.
We've got to. You and I couldn't make it up there alone. It's 2,500 feet to go, maybe more. No, we've got to go back. Let the others try.
Just because he's gone, is that why?
Look, I've done more climbing than you out here. What happened today is bad for the nerves. We couldn't make it. We'll go back. Try again later.
But the monsoons will be here later. We've got to do it now.
Thomas and the others can do it.
No, we'll keep going. I've got to. I'm not going back.
What's the matter with you? You're talking like a kid.
Look, I was the last one on your list when you got the party together, wasn't I?
Yes.
Why? Why was I last?
I don't know. Somebody had to be. It was you, that's all.
You're a liar. You didn't want me along. None of you did.
You're here, aren't you?
You know I'm afraid of climbing, don't you?
Isn't everybody? A little?
Isn't that why we do it? Isn't that part of it?
I mean really scared. I'm really scared. You know that.
No, I don't.
Look, something happened to me today. I've got to go on to the top now.
You think I'll call you a coward if we don't?
No.
All right, then, forget it. We'll try again. Maybe next year. You'll be along, too.
I'll do it alone, then. I'm going on alone. Now, if you want to come with me, all right. If not, it doesn't matter anyway. I'm going on. So long.
John! John! He didn't stop. Just moved up the ice slab and around a hummock out of sight. I went back inside the tent to get my pack. I couldn't let him do it alone, and I was trapped into going with him. Then I saw that the fool hadn't even taken his rope. It was neatly coiled in a corner. I grabbed it up. And as I did so, I saw the end of it. The end which had broken when Peruzzi hung over the crevasse. The rope which Eldridge had said was parted by the ice. But there were no frayed ends. The break was clean. It had been cut through. And the oil of Eldridge's knife blade was still on it. When Eldridge had thought that he was going over the crevasse, he'd cut the rope which had held Norman Peruzzi's body some 20 feet into the chasm. To save his own life, he'd done this. I pulled the coil through the straps of my pack and left the tent. I caught up with Eldridge about 100 feet higher. He was standing on a shallow ledge, catching his breath, and his head was tilted back, eyes fixed on that mountaintop, the brain of the monster.
Nasty bit back there. I was cutting steps up the cliff. I nearly fell.
You didn't, though.
No, I didn't. I say, you're coming with me, eh?
I want to see that you get down alive. You forgot your rope. I found it in the tent.
I didn't think I'd need it.
You might. Here.
Thanks.
You better tie on together.
All right. Do you want to go first?
No. It's your party now. You lead.
All right.
He had a funny look on his face as we roped together. I think he must have known then that I'd found out what he'd done. He didn't say anything, though, but turned and began to move upwards. At 3 o'clock that afternoon, we were at about 25,000 feet. It was hard to breathe now, terribly hard. We decided to rest for a few minutes. I remembered looking down from the ridge, looking down into the incredible scene below. Then up, and the peak which loomed over us, clear against the sky, perhaps 1,500, perhaps 2,000 feet over us. I remembered Peruzzi's excitement as he'd seen it further down. And even then, I thought it could be beaten, that we might do it.
You'll use the oxygen from here as soon as we start again.
Can't do any more today.
Oh, yes. We can go higher.
Then what?
When it gets dark, camp. Finish it tomorrow, if we don't today.
If the storm comes up, we'll be in trouble.
It won't. We're going to make it. I know we are.
Then what?
It doesn't matter after that.
I have to go down to the others.
Yes, I suppose so.
I have to tell them about Norman.
Yes.
Going to tell the same story?
I think we will.
Know why I followed you? Why I came along?
Yes.
Like that, yes. You murdered a man, and that's all there is to it.
I was afraid. I knew if I went over, we'd all go. It was the only way.
If you'd waited, we could have got him out.
I didn't know it then. I felt myself going. I had to do it.
What's all this for? To wipe out the sin? Get to the peak and be a man again?
In a way, perhaps.
You won't be. You'll never be. When this gets out, and it's going to, there'll be no place for you to hide. No place to go.
We'd better get moving.
We began to use the oxygen sparingly and kept moving up slower and slower. Our hearts pounding with the effort. 100 feet. 200. 3. I began to feel lightheaded. I couldn't. Not another step. I couldn't. Then it was 400 feet. Eldridge collapsed in front of me and lay in the fine snow, sobbing. We stop. Stop here.
We've got to go on.
No.
Go on.
And he sobbed like a child. His mind willed him to keep going, and his body wouldn't allow it. We lay there, using our precious oxygen, because I think, had we not done so, we'd have died of fatigue. The wind had died down completely. And there was a silence so complete that you could almost imagine it bore a sound in itself. Deadening. Awful. We made camp and tried to sleep. We were too tired to think of food. With the night came a heavy mist. And it began to grow much colder. The morning of May 20th was gray, clouded. The peak of the mountain was shrouded, and I knew that it was going to snow. Directly ahead of us was an ice wall. There was no way around it. We had to climb almost vertically, cut our own steps with ice axe, one by one, and climb. This time I took the lead. And as I knotted the rope, Eldridge said,
"You don't trust me, do you? You're afraid if I'm leading and you fall, I'll cut the rope again."
"You might. Let's go." At that point, we had ascended 25,400 feet. The ice wall would take us another 100 higher. The wind began to blow when we were halfway up. Two pathetic specks on a wall of the world. "We'll move around to the right after this step. There's a bit of a ledge." "Okay. Come on." The ledge was at most 10 inches wide, narrowing down in places to no more than a toehold. I felt my way along until the ledge gave out. Then the hacking of steps began again. The wind tore at me, screamed, and like a great hand tried to sweep me off the wall. Once I looked down, and it was as though a white blanket were stretched out beneath. It was snow. I could see it billowing up and around, while above, the summit ignored everything beneath. The blizzard hit us as we reached the top of the ice wall. We found a little shelter in the lee of a pyramid-shaped summit and waited. And then the slope seemed to lurch, and I had a split second to see the wave of snow pouring down on me. It was over, done. The avalanche swept us down, smothering, killing. And I thought of the ice wall and the drop below. That's all I remember. I had stopped falling. It was my first thought when I came to. I wasn't dead. I saw a pair of legs crouched next to me.
I didn't think you were going to make it.
Where'd I land?
You're hanging over the ice wall.
But you were behind me. You didn't go over.
No. Don't ask me why. It must have been a corner of the avalanche that hit us. You ended up pulling me down. My axe caught in one of the steps and it held us both.
And you pulled me up.
Yeah, looks like it.
Thanks. How long have I been out?
An hour. A little more.
Blizzard's letting up.
Here. Do you feel like going on?
I think so.
All right.
You tell me something.
What?
Why did you pull me out of it? Why didn't you just let me go over the edge? Then you wouldn't have had me around to tell.
Look, I'm not a murderer, Bob. I cut Norman's rope because I was afraid. If I thought there was even a chance of us not falling, I wouldn't have done it, but I didn't know. Look, that doesn't excuse me.
But it doesn't mean I'd kill you to get out of it.
Yeah.
We better save the talk. We'll need our breath. You want to lead, or shall I?
I'll do it.
The storm had passed, and although we could see the cold sky again, the peak was still only occasionally visible through patches of mist. We went up, higher, higher. And then my oxygen tank went out and we had to share Eldridge's. We'd nearly reached 26,000 feet. We could see the top. For a moment, it stood out clear. And it looked so easy. The last lap. But now we could only move a few steps at a time until we had to rest. And I couldn't get up again.
It looks pretty easy past that ridge.
I have to wait.
All right. Wait for me.
No.
Now go on.
No, together. Just wait. A couple of minutes.
It'll be getting dark. I'll come back for you.
No. Minute.
Yeah. You? You take the oxygen.
No.
I don't need...
No, John, no.
I won't need it. You wait here.
No.
I'll get down again.
Wait.
Look, I'm sorry. I was afraid. I'm still afraid. That's why I've got to do it. You understand? Sit on, Bob.
I didn't have the strength to stop him as he untied the rope which had held us together. Then he was gone. And after a while, I felt stronger. I sat up. I could see him. A dark blob against the mountain snow. Smaller. Smaller. And he was climbing upwards. He'd reached the final pinnacle and became a dot that was lost in the mist. I saw Eldridge once more. He couldn't have been more than 250 feet below the peak. For perhaps 10 seconds, I saw him. And then he disappeared. I waited. Waited into the night. The next morning, I began to look for him. But the oxygen was gone. I knew that if I had to climb another foot, I'd die. And so I turned back. There was no wind anymore. It was almost warm. Somehow, I got down. Down to the base camp... I told him the story. Almost the whole story, but not quite. I changed a rope which had been cut with a knife into a rope which had frayed and parted on the ice. I remember as we started down to the valley below, I turned and stood a minute, looking back, looking up. Then a cloud softly poured over the peak. And in a moment, the mountain was gone.
Suspense. Presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Mr. John Hodiak.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from March 16, 1953 on CBS, showcasing the Anthony Ellis story, The Mountain. In the following year, Ellis would go on to direct the program through 1956, when legendary radio producer and director William N. Robeson took over the helm. It's an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. And now a true story on the Cavalcade of America called the Unsinkable Marblehead. We hear adventure in the Java Sea in this episode, broadcast on June 21st, 1943 on the NBC Red Network, with many stars from Broadway playing two parts like Edwin Jerome, Frank Reddick, Everett Sloan, Paul Stewart, and Will Gear. Host Dean Jagger also performs in the broadcast.
The Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont, maker of better things for better living through chemistry, presents Dean Jagger as Captain Robinson of the Unsinkable Marblehead.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont. Our play tonight gives a vivid picture of our Navy at grips with the enemy. Our play tonight, written especially for Cavalcade by Charles K. Freeman, tells how a gallant warship won for herself the title The Unsinkable Marblehead. DuPont brings you this exciting drama starring Dean Jagger as Captain Robinson on the Cavalcade of America. An East Coast shipyard, 1923.
Can you see all right, Mabel?
Pretty good. Change places with me. You've never seen a ship launch before. It's an old story to me. Come on.
Oh, imagine seeing a battleship launch.
A cruiser, dear. Cruiser. It is a cruiser, isn't it, Will?
Oh, yes, yes. A cruiser. The Marblehead. Cruiser's a name for towns, battleship for states, submarine for fish.
Oh, see the woman who's going to christen it?
Where?
Up there, holding the flowers. Say, I wonder if it's a bottle of champagne. Oh. Come on over and you can see.
What are those men pounding down there for, Daddy? Isn't the ship docked?
They're driving out the braces that hold the ship so it'll slip into the water.
Oh, will it make a big splash?
Pretty big.
What's that funny thing at the end of the ship, Daddy?
Those are propellers. They spin around and drive the ship through the water.
Oh, I know that. I mean that big thing.
Oh, that's the rudder.
Gee, it's as tall as a house. What's a rudder?
That's what the ship steers with. Don't ask so many questions.
Won't it break off?
No. Might get shot off, but I doubt it.
What if it did get shot off?
And heaven help them is all I can say. A ship without a rudder is...
I christen thee, Marblehead!
That was the Marblehead 19 years ago. 1924. I wasn't her skipper then. I wasn't assigned to her until some years later. Fought a few brief months after she was launched, she was the pride of the fleet. Jane's fighting ships gave her the usual paragraph: Marblehead, cruiser class, third of her line, four screws, 35 knots, displacement, so and so, you know. The usual specifications that would be of interest only to a naval officer or the nation's enemy. Nobody had much of an idea then that she would ever tangle with the enemy and limp halfway around the world from the Java Sea. But that's getting ahead of the story. Early last year, she was reported sunk off the coast of Java. It was the Japanese who reported the sinking. So sorry, Japanese wrong. One day last spring, the Marblehead got home.
Get over the bow line.
Aye, sir.
Order the lines double up and the engine secured, Mr. Blake. Just take over. I'm going below.
Yes, sir.
Double up lines and secure the engine. Secure all guns and battle lookout watches.
Are you the captain, sir?
That's right.
Repeck, we're reporting aboard, sir. This is the Marblehead, isn't it?
That's right.
They must have sent through the wrong repair order. You look shipshape as can be.
You better have a look below, this way.
After you, sir.
Well, did you say shipshape?
Sweet Emmeline, what hit her, Captain?
Now, the wardrooms and living quarters will all need new installations throughout.
Where did all this happen, sir?
The Java Sea.
Yeah, but how did you get her back here? You didn't sail 15,000 miles without a rudder.
No, not quite. We rigged up the emergency steering gear in Ceylon. Before that, we had to steer with our engines from the time we got hit.
You know what, Captain? I think this baby must be unsinkable.
Unsinkable? Perhaps. But there were days and weeks after that morning in the Java Sea when nobody in his right mind would have given a plugged nickel for the Marblehead. That was right after Pearl Harbor, when everybody, including the Japanese, was saying, "Where's the American Navy?" Well, this particular unit of the Navy was in the Java Sea, maintaining constant lookout for an enemy that never showed up. manning the guns, 4 hours on, 8 hours off. Still, there was time to shoot the breeze, loaf in the sun, and indulge in a sailor's favorite pastime, belly aching.
First section, relieve the watch.
All guns, control testing, battle stations.
Control testing? What kind of a war is this, anyway?
What are you kicking about? You get a chance to use that gun. You'll talk different then.
Maybe we'd see some action if we were on a destroyer. This old cruiser, all we ever do is play backstop.
Or what? This ain't any sandlot game, cousin. It's the series. Starts out slow, but nobody ever takes it in a walk. Give me a match.
Destroyers put in at a port once in a while, too. Gee, just to see trees and hills and walk on dry land.
Oh, dry up. You're homesick.
Nuts. I'm seasick. Sick of seeing nothing but water and sand and palm trees and flat, level country. Where I come from, we got green grass and fields and hills.
You should have joined the infantry.
You don't know my old man. He did a hitch in the Navy. He spent it all at Great Lakes. Gee, but it's pretty there. I did my boots there.
Yeah, country club. Now, take Sam Pete. Crying out loud. Will you cut out that whistling or else whistle something that don't give you the willies? Tension. Sorry, Captain, I didn't see you, sir.
At ease, boys. The hills are home, huh? You miss them?
Yes, sir, sometimes.
Where are you from, son?
Wisconsin, sir.
That's nice country, Wisconsin. And nice rolling hills. You know, I've got a record of that song in my stateroom. Ask my orderly for it sometime. Take it down in your quarters and play it.
Thank you, sir.
And don't let it get you down, boy. Every sailor's a land lover at heart sometime. So that's the way it was some days, most days. 4 on, 8 off. Waiting. Waiting, watching for something that was bound to happen sooner or later. Eyes tired from constant watching, and tempers sharp from the uncertainty of waiting. And that's the way it was that morning, plowing through the glassy waters.
Landfall off our port bow, sir.
I suppose we'll be the Kangean Islands. Well, the Admiral should be changing course soon unless...
Unless those seagulls turn out to be Jap planes.
Could be. Keep your eyes peeled for a flag hoist.
That goes now, sir.
Well, let's have it.
Looks like it is. An order to scatter.
I had a hunch. Radio, are you getting a message?
Coming in now, sir.
Well, let me have it as it comes.
Patrol plane out of Surabaya. Reports planes approaching.
The Houston has broken out a flag hoist, sir.
What message?
Houston reports unidentified aircraft sighted.
I'll take that. Bridge.
Forest Sky Lookout reporting. Planes are starboard bar, sir.
I make out the signal now, sir. All ships to scatter immediately.
We'll call all hands to battle station.
Yes, sir.
Lieutenant Bracken reporting,
yes,
sir.
Yes, yes. What is it, Lieutenant?
Aircraft formations approaching a definitely enemy aircraft.
Well, this is it. Sound general quarters.
You see him, Jonesy? I can't even hear him.
The Japs are flying high. Won't hear him till they come down with a stick of bombs.
Look, I see him now, Jonesy. There.
Yeah. Twin-engine bombers.
Breaking into formations. One bunch heading straight for us.
Keep your eyes glued to that rangefinder, kid. Ought to be coming through any minute now.
They're almost over us, Jonesy. What's the skipper waiting for, huh? What's he waiting for?
Bridge to engine room. Stand by for full power.
Stand by for full power, sir.
Right standard rudder. Steady on 250.
Right standard rudder, sir. Steady on 250.
295.
295, sir.
One flight's coming in range now, sir.
I check with the sky control.
Aye, sir. Sky control.
Sky control, aye.
Get range and deflection. All guns stand by.
Aye, aye, sir.
Fire control.
Fire control, aye.
Switch to local control.
Aye, aye, sir.
Left full rudder. Steady on 075.
Left full rudder. Steady on 075, sir.
Take it easy, kid. Steady.
I gotta get one of those guys, Jonesy. Just one of them. Look, Houston's firing. Why don't they give us the range?
Gun six, reporting, sir.
Range 2,000, deflection 0300.
Range 2,000, deflection 0300. Are we set, kid?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, kid. Let them have it.
Will I let them have it? Can't you fast enough?
I told you this wasn't no sandlot game. This is a series. Hey, look out. Get down.
What's the idea?
You'll find out. Listen. Ball one. You all right, kid?
Yeah, I guess so.
Hey, you ain't hit, kid. There's just vibration on your feet now. Look out. Coming again. Ball two. Missed again. Now, remember, kid, down off your feet when they're on top. You can't get them straight ahead.
Ball three. Look at that one, Jonesy.
Yeah. Must have got him.
Heading this way.
Suicide dive.
He's mine, Jonesy. He's mine. I'll get him.
Yeah, game's over if you don't.
Look at him come.
Steady, kid. Steady. Okay, now. More to starboard. More to starboard.
I think I got him. He's wobbling. There he goes.
Yeah.
I got him. In the drink.
Yeah, sure did, kid. Home run with the bases loaded. This is only the first inning.
Lieutenant Bracken reporting, sir. Gunnery reports rangefinder knocked out and forward any aircraft battery.
Well, tell them to share a rangefinder with the after battery, but keep them firing, if not by rangefinder, then by guess and by contact.
There comes another one, sir, off our port bow.
Well, get the range to the forward battery.
Yes, sir. Look out. Get down.
Captain.
You hurt, sir? No. Just knocked off my feet. Where did they get us?
Can't tell from here, sir. Felt like the port bow.
We'll find out. Well, they're tailing it now. They're probably out of bombs. All right, Blake, keep all guns manned.
Aye, sir.
And have the rest of the crew turn to below to fight fire and clear up wreckage. And get the men with the worst injuries and burns to sick bay. If we've still got a sick bay.
We've lost control, sir. We're circling.
Messenger reporting to Mr. Drury, sir. Forward compartment flooded as high as CPO quarters.
How's that draft, did he say?
Yes, sir. About double. Fires the bath the wardroom, but damage control parties at work, sir.
Good.
Message from chief engineer, sir. Steering engine destroyed and rudder jammed full left.
That's just what I thought. Steering engine room flooded, messenger?
Yes, sir. But they're diving to get it clear.
Oh, tell them to keep on it and keep me informed.
Aye.
Goggins reporting, sir.
Goggins. Perkins, why aren't you in sick bay?
Sick bay's demolished. We're burning pretty badly below deck. I'm sorry it took me so long to get up here.
How long before we can use the steering engine?
No telling, sir. Any orders from them, sir?
You lay below for first aid. Van Bergen will take over for you.
I can still get around.
We'll send for you if we need you, Goggins. Van Bergen, take over for me here. I'm going below to inspect the damage myself. Now keep circling. That's all we can do, and the leg can get the rudder free. That's the first thing. We're a perfect target this way. What's the trouble here, Gunner?
The men are caught in the magazine, sir. Keep working on the hatch, kid. I'll work on the fire.
Pretty hot. Let's have some towels, Jonesy.
Here. Here's my shirt. Take it easy below. They'll get you out.
This hatch is buckled from the heat.
Here, you. Help this lad with his hatch. Raise your little light for that job. Good work, man.
Thank you, sir. That's done it. black as pitch down there.
I'm going down, kid. Stand by.
Let me go down, Jonesy. I'm no good up here.
Stand by, like I told you.
Mr. Mate's right, son. The men down there are in bad shape. Stand by here to help them out. What is it, orderly?
Reporting for engineering officer, sir. Magazines and storerooms are flooded.
What are the casualties?
15 killed or fatally wounded. About 50 seriously hurt, sir. Still haven't found them all out.
Hey, Corman.
How about medical supplies, Carter?
Pretty short, sir. Sick bay got a bad. We're trying to get some talcum powder for burns.
Yes, there should be some aboard. Find it.
Right.
No. Stand by, orderly. I may need you to carry a message to the bridge.
All right, sir.
You there, kid. Kid from Wisconsin.
Yes, sir.
Did you get all the men out of the magazine?
Yes, sir. Just about in time. Last one must have got the ventilator. Jonesy's still inside
making
sure. I
see, yes. We'll get him out, round up a working party, and get the gunpowder topside and overboard.
Well, the hoist is jammed, sir.
Well, then you'll have to carry it up.
The compartment between here and the companionway is flooded, sir. Shall we open the watertight door and flood this one too, sir?
Yes, but now be careful. Watch for fire and short circuits. Remember, you're handling gunpowder.
Yes, sir.
All right, come on, orderly. I'm going below to the steering room and see. I may want to take a minute. I may want you to take a minute.
I told you, this place is full of powder.
I know. We got to get a topside and overboard. Captain's orders.
What? Does he know the hoist?
Yeah, I told him. We'll open the watertight door to the next compartment aft. Flood this one and use the number 4 companionway through the next compartment.
Okay, we don't drown doing it. Here, give me a hand with this. Here, watertight door.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, stand by for a ducking.
On, Blake?
Yes, sir. Repair crew was on the job, though. You know, Captain, we've taken on so much water and lost so much structural strength, I'm afraid she'll break at number 1 stack if we get any weather.
Well, muster all available hands and form a bucket brigade until we can get the water down.
All right, sir.
All right, now pass them along now, men. What is it, messenger?
Reporting for engineer, sir. He's evacuated a forward fire room.
Did he say why?
The men were being asphyxiated, sir. He can still give you 27 knots, though, as long as he can get oil that isn't full of salt water, that is, sir.
Well, very good. Report back to your station.
Aye, sir.
What's the news aft, Parsons?
They just got the rudder free, sir. Moran and Johnson diving and doing it just by feeling the pitch black.
Well, what was the trouble?
The motors are burned out, but the hydraulic rams are okay. They bled them and freed the yoke. The rudder swings now, but we can't steer.
Good. Nice work. Lock it amidship, if possible. All right, we can get underway now. You two men give a hand to the working party that's getting the powder out of number 4 magazine.
All right, sir.
And tell them on the bridge I'm on my way up, Parsons. A Marblehead can still navigate.
How are we doing, Jonesy?
Not too bad. Fine working party you rounded up. Working party of two, you and me.
Hey, Jonesy, will you stop bumping into me? That's the third time.
I didn't bump you. That was a...
Then what was it?
Yeah, skip it. Feel a lot better if you don't know.
Oh, I get you. One of the fellas that didn't...
Yeah.
All right, come on. Let's hurry and get this stuff out of here.
Hey, lights.
Jeez. Blinds you, don't it?
Yeah. Must have got the current turned on.
Well, that's good.
Hey, kid, look out. Them two wires are short. Kid!
How are things below, Captain?
Well, the Marblehead's still a man of war. We're afloat. We still have our firepower. Still making 27 knots. I lay a course for Java through the Lombok Straits. We'll put in at Chilacap.
How will we steer, sir?
We'll steer by the engines. Just as long as they can keep them turning. Starboard engine ahead full. Stop port.
Starboard engine ahead full. Stop port. Aye, aye, sir.
Back port. Then even them up.
Back port. Then even them up.
Port engine ahead. Stop starboard. Even them up.
Port engine ahead. Stop starboard. Even them up. Aye, aye, sir.
Doctor, how's the kid?
Still under opiate, third degree burn.
Will it pull through?
We'll do our best.
Hey, that you, Jonesy?
Hi, kid. Doctor was just telling me you're coming along swell. Hurt much?
I messed things up good when I bumped into those two live wires, didn't I? Was Captain...
Yeah, he understood. It happened to anybody. Lights coming on sudden and blind you the way they did. What I can't figure is,
how you got me out before you folded up.
Oh, quit your kidding. I couldn't have.
Yeah, sure. Honest. There's a doctor here.
Oh, hiya, Doc.
Don't talk too much now. Try to get some rest.
Well, Doctor, just a minute.
Yes, Captain. Let him sleep now, Jones, if you can.
Yes, sir. How are we doing, Jonesy? Ship, I mean.
Oh, headed to the Java. If we keep ahead of the water that's coming in, we'll be okay.
That's good. It's swell to be on land again. Java's so nice and green. I kind of like to get there before...
Oh, skip it, skip it. You're going to be all right. Hey, Doctor.
Of course he is. Here's the captain to see you, son.
Well, well, you're looking pretty fit, my boy. Well done. Now, I wanted to bring you that phonograph record, but... Well, there isn't much left of my cabin. Well, maybe we can get a record in Java.
That'd be great. Thanks, Captain.
We'll have you fixed up in no time, Java. And someday, you'll be going back for a leave, maybe Wisconsin. How about it?
How far do you suppose it is from Java to Wisconsin, Captain?
We're getting pretty good at this, Captain. We didn't get more than 40 degrees off the course that time.
By the time we get in, we'll be doing fine. Oh, good morning, Doctor. I'm glad you came up.
I wanted to ask if you plan to bury the dead at sea.
Doctor, I'd rather not. You know, it's funny. I've been a sailor all my life, but when my turn comes, I hope to rest ashore. I'd like to bury my men ashore. What do you think? We'll be in Chilachop in 10 hours.
We put them all in the after turret.
Well, then by all means, Doctor, we'll bury our dead ashore. Thank you, Doctor.
Present arms.
Almighty Father, here in alien but friendly soil, far from the homes that they've loved, we lay to rest our comrades. And yet in a larger sense, we know that to men who love freedom's way of life, all lands of freedom are home. We would remember all men who sleep in alien lands, comfort those who have given their sons, that liberty may one day prevail through all the earth. Unto God's great mercy, we commit these departed in sure and certain hope for the resurrection unto eternal life. Amen. Simontown, still wounded, but gamely plowing on, the Marblehead continued her long voyage home.
The radio report just been picked up from Tokyo, Captain.
Yes, well, let's see it. Well, listen to this, gentlemen. Radio, Tokyo. In a ferocious engagement off Surabaya, intrepid Japanese airmen today sank the mighty United States cruiser Marblehead. Lieutenant Seo and Mitsubishi were among those who died heroes' deaths in their sacrificial assault on the Marblehead, which was sunk despite its heavy armor plate and savage resistance.
They must have got us confused with two other ships.
Strikes me, the Marblehead's doing pretty well for a ship at the bottom of the sea. And doing pretty well she was, 7,000 miles to her home port, but she made it. Then when American repair crews had taken over, I was told to report to the Secretary of the Navy in Washington.
And it is therefore my privilege to confer upon you, Captain Robinson, the Navy's highest award for distinguished service in the line of your profession. Proceeding without regard for personal safety, you led your men in a successful engagement with the enemy, and in the face of extraordinary odds, brought your ship safely into its home port. Permit me as well to extend to you my personal congratulations, Captain Robinson.
Thank you, sir. May I ask one question, Mr. Secretary?
Why, yes, of course. Anything you like, Captain.
Well, I'll be going back to the ship. And they're going to be asking me just one question.
When will we be able to get back into action again? How soon our ship will be ready, I mean.
Well, I wouldn't worry too much about that if I were you, Robinson. I have a hunch the department may be thinking about an admiral's shoulder board for you. In that case, you'd rate a more important command than the model head.
Well, that would be a great honor, of course, sir, but... You know, I like the Marblehead back if I can get it. Somehow I feel safer aboard her than a bigger ship.
Safer?
Yes, and do you know why, sir? Because, well, so help me, I believe she really is unsinkable.
Star of this evening's cavalcade.
It's been a real privilege to play the part of such a distinguished officer and gallant gentleman as Captain, now Admiral Robinson. And if our reenactment of the Marblehead heroic engagement has inspired you, our audience, to a greater realization of the need for fighting the war every minute of every day, then our efforts have been worthwhile.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
The Cavalcade of America on Tuned to Yesterday from June 21st, 1943 on the NBC Red Network. And that wraps this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levenier. Thanks for tuning in.